knowing that God knows us. How do we know that God really knows me? I've talked to husbands and wives who maintain that their spouses don't know them, don't understand them. Problem. I've talked to children who maintain that their parents don't understand them. I've talked to parents who maintain that their children don't understand them. Really don't know them. They don't know what I'm trying to do. They don't want to understand what my aims are, a college student has told me on occasion. How do we know that God knows us? That God understands us? Because from the Bible we get to know it. For he knoweth our frame. He remembereth that we are dust. Frame is skeletal. God knows what supports us. When I stand up as a man, or take my stand, even if I'm sitting in a boardroom chair, he knows what is my frame, what holds me up. He remembers that my substance is dust. Back of this is a compassion and pity. When a mother looks at her child who's starting to write, paper blotted, paper torn through by pressing too hard, the letters of the alphabet made irregularly, and the first time the child gets together her act and writes, "I love you, Mama," the appreciation that the mother shows knows no end. I remember reading something Campbell Morgan wrote many decades ago about blameless and sinlessness. That letter, "Mama, I love you," was blameless, but it was not faultless. Many faults, many sins of calligraphy in it, but it was blameless. Blameless has to do with responsibility and knowledge and experience. God knows our frames. Like a father pities, so the Lord pities. So as we begin our study of the lesson this week, it's with the consciousness that God really knows the stuff of which we are made. Part number one, from the foundation of the world. God knew not only that the Lamb would be slain from the foundation of the world, but he would know those who would worship him, whose names are written in the book of life. He also knew those whose names are not written in the book of life. So God's knowledge is complete. It's profound. It reaches every depth. Now here brings a problem to some minds. They cannot conceive of how somebody who knew everything wouldn't interfere with the outworking of the affairs of life. If I knew that my little child was going to be burned by touching the hot plate, wouldn't I do something to intervene? Maybe not. When our little daughter was growing up, she would put her fingers into problem areas, and her mother warned her. She was tempted to touch the hot plate, and her mother warned her, took her little finger and brought it as close to the hot plate so she could feel the heat, and said, "No, that's hot. Don't touch." One time, when the plate was hot, but not too hot, the little girl touched and learned a lesson. She's never touched since. So God regulates the temptation, knowing that we are weak. He permits the temptation, and he allows us to get hurt, because that might be the only way of awakening our attention. And so the knowledge of God works for the salvation of men. And even though he knows those whose names will not be written in the book of life, he still does his utmost to get them to change their minds. We have illustrations here, Esau and Jacob, Peter, Judas. We can go through the Bible and find many men and women, for whom God worked to bring about a change of attitude, even though he knew the end from the beginning. God knows the good and evil. He knew what Eve would do. He knew what Cain would do. He knew what King Saul would do. And he also knew what David would do, and Saul of Tarsus would do, and Peter would do, and what I would do. He knows the evil that I commit, that I will commit, of which I may have no knowledge until afterwards, or which I might do, having the knowledge. He knows that. But he loves with an everlasting love. And he allows circumstances to come about so that we can make the right choices. He doesn't want us to make the wrong choice, but he allows our individuality to function. In fact, personal responsibility, individuality, the power of choice, is the most sacred gift that God has given to man. He hasn't given that to the lower orders. But to man, to decide and do, that makes him akin to deity. And he wishes to strengthen the choice for goodness, and he wishes to give all the evidence necessary to help us not to make the choice of evil. Part number 3. God knows everything about us. Thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest my down-sitting and my uprising. Thou understand my thoughts. Thou compassest my path, my lying down. Thou art acquainted with all. There is nothing about us that is not known to God. Now what does this tell us about God? See, the whole quarter's lessons is that we must get acquainted with God. Now if you knew that somebody you were doing a favor was going to turn against you and kill you, what would you do about it? If you knew that the gift you were going to give to him, he would despise and burn, how carefully would you gift wrap it? And yet God, who knows everything, functions for our salvation optimally. What more could I have done for you that I have not done, he asked Israel. And by the way, if you've got any idea of something that God could do for you that he has not done, why not pray and ask him? And he will do for you exceeding abundantly above all you ask or think. God never sleeps. He's awake all the time, thinking up ways of helping us. He knows all about us. He knows the pitfalls that we are going to fall into. He sends warnings before we fall into them. He sends way of escape when we're in them. He gives us forgiveness when we're out of them. There is nothing that God does. So knowing that God knows us, and then realizing how he treats us, should awaken in us a tremendous love and appreciation for his consideration. Part number 4. I know my sheep. Now, the sheep is a term used of the flock of God. If I may push the illustration, it describes those who are members of his church, those who have believed from the heart that form of doctrine, who understand, who know his will, who have listened to his voice. They are sheep. Of them, Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. Now, the good shepherd laid down his life for the sheep in order that they might live forever. He knows them. They know him. So, I know my sheep. God knows them that are his. But what does he do about it? Now, let's stop a moment and ask ourselves a question. Look back over the past 10 years, or 1 year, or the past month. What has the Good Shepherd done for you? Have you always responded as a sheep that is obedient and loving and submissive, following Him in the green pastures to the still waters? Do you recognize His voice? Are you following Him? Or have you wandered away? Now my question is, what did God do about that? What did the Good Shepherd do in reaction to that? To reveal to you the sort of being He is. He knows you. He knows exactly what you've done. He knows exactly where you are. He just comes and whispers to you. He doesn't have to shout. Adam? Eve? Leslie? John? Where are you? He's right there. He knows. You're trying to hide, but He's there. What does He do? How does He react? What has He done for you? And so as His sheep, if you will meditate upon the Good Shepherd's reaction, you will get to know Him better. Part number 5. I know thy works. In Revelation 2 and 3, we have the 7 churches. To each one of those churches, in the whole history of Christendom, Jesus says over and over and over again, I know thy works. He knows. He doesn't need any man to tell Him what is in man. He made man. He knows. So, what should this do to us? First of all, I think it should pull away all complacency. It should pull away all self-praising. He knows. We may have camouflaged. We may have covered up. We may have ignored, but He knows. And yet He comes to us and tells us at the end of each one of those messages, if you will only overcome, if you will only overcome, I'll give you. To him that overcometh, I will give. He doesn't leave us when He knows our works, how bad they are. And so we can come to Him, as I often come to Him and say, Lord, you know I'm a mess. I'm supposed to be this. I'm supposed to be in this position. But you know better than I do what a mess I am. But I love you. Please take me. Help me. And then you get in your heart the certainty that God knows you. And in spite of that, still loves you. Part number 6. He knows our future. While we don't know the day or the hour, He knows. He knows when the end will come in this physical life, if it's His purpose. And He knows how it comes. And He knows the end in the hereafter. He's prepared for it. I'm going to prepare a place for you. And I put myself right in there and I say, thank you, Lord. A place prepared for you. We all have friends. We have relatives who come and stay with us. What do you prepare when they come? You think, now what do they like? What food do they like? If it's possible, you can get them flowers. What flowers do they like? You can put in their room, just by the bedside table. What books would they want to read? Magazines? What do they like? You think through, and out of your collection, you bring a book or two or a magazine. You bring it there. Perhaps they like the newspaper or Newsweek or Time. Let's get them that. Put it as a surprise by the side of their bed. What else do they like? Well, if it's cold and chilly, they like a hot water bottle. Make the bed warm. Perhaps they like a window open or a window closed. What do they want? Jesus says, I'm going to prepare a place for you. He knows us perfectly. He understands every detail of our lives. And the place that He has prepared in the future will amaze us with the revelation of His matchless love. Knowing that God knows us, and in spite of that, is doing and will do more than we can ask or think, should bring us to our knees in gratitude.